And to that piece of lieutenant that's always on his podcast, bashing us, him.
All right, everybody. Eric Dim, your most complained cop, NYPD. This is New York's finest retired and filtered podcast, and we're doing our 265 Police Live series. Along with me is the founder and the co-host of the podcast, John McCary, retired lieutenant. We got a good one for you. This is an episode we're going to discuss the publicity stunt that was just done by the NYPD. The NYPD chiefs ride the New York City subway, but we like to call it, at the finest and filtered, the NYPD clowns ride the New York City subway. Let's get right into it, brother. What do you got?
Clowns on the train, baby. Or as the public relations campaign that I personally believe was put out by Deputy Commissioner of Operations, Kaz Daughtry. I believe this was his idea, and you've seen 30-year chiefs bow down. Yes, boss. Great idea. I'll get right out there on the train. This is done to fight what they say the battle that they're in is the battle of perception, the battle of fear, and the battle of social media. But at this podcast, what we like to say is it's actually the battle of the truth and what New York City residents and subway riders are actually facing.
John, like you said, the battle of truth. Which is why I say when, particularly Michael Kemper, who's usually the closer when it comes to statements about the New York City subway, when he's trying to pick up the pieces for Kaz Daughtry's, you know, stepping on his own foot. I would say that what we actually hear from them is combating perception with deception. And that's what they're doing, is they're deceiving the public. And I find this entire stunt just insulting to the everyday New Yorker. Every New Yorker right now should be insulted by this publicity stunt. I mean, do these NYPD chiefs think they're some type of entertainers? Do they think they're celebrities? I mean, this whole thing is just laughable. I think it's idiotic. I can't believe that's what you and I were saying offline. This is the part I don't understand. I can't believe that they actually got together and said, you know what? That's a great idea. That's right. You know what? We're going to ride the subways, and like Tanya Kinsella put out, because I put out a clip of Tanya Kinsella talking to the public, basically giving them leading questions. Do you feel safe? I mean, you're standing there with an undercover security team. You're standing there with a large uniform presence. And I don't just mean Jeffrey Madrick, because he has a large uniform presence on his own. But the actual entourage with these leading questions while you have cameras in and around them. What do you think they're going to say? It's absolutely ridiculous. I can't stop laughing about it. I'm trying to keep a serious face, but this is a big joke. John, what do you got?
Yeah, no, I'm gonna play that clip. Exactly what you're saying, dude. It's all deception. This is a public relations campaign, and I mean, it's a slap in the face to New York City residents. It's a slap in the face to subway riders. You know, they didn't put the unfriendly people on there that really had told the truth, the real New Yorkers that had something to say about what they're doing. I mean, because you take a bunch of chiefs from all over, every borough, every bureau, you put them in uniform, and it's not like you're telling them to ride the train. They're going down there one time during rush hour. They're having police go there ahead of time to clear the transit stations and the transit stations they're going to ride. What do you think they rode? Three stops maybe? And they're headed down there with their security details. And again, I don't know why cops have security details. I don't know. Maybe the police commissioner deserves one. But I don't think that cops in general should have a security detail. I don't think a bureau chief who 99.9% of New York City has no clue who they are. I don't think they need a security detail. So they go down there with their security details and about 20 cops on top of having the cops clear out that transit station ahead. So they're clearly showing exactly what New Yorkers are saying. It's unsafe because I could see you don't want to go down in the train in the hole by yourself. I could see that you're in uniform. I get that. But cops do it too. They go down two of them every day. So how many cops do you need as a chief? Why do you need more cops than a regular police officer? If anything, you should need less cops than a regular police officer, right? You're more experienced. You know how to handle people better. But what you see in this video, I'm gonna play it right now, but take a good look. There's undercovers all around. I mean, there's about 30, 40 people with them on top of their social media team and their photographers. So here's the clip.
Doing good?
The chief and first dep got on an uptown 6 train from Brooklyn Bridge City Hall. From small talk to tips and real concerns, they're hearing it all.
You feel safe?
Doing good?
The chief and first dep got on an uptown 6 train from Brooklyn Bridge City Hall. From small talk to tips and real concerns, they're hearing it all.
You feel safe?
I just had to play that way. Sorry.
Now, I'm going to tell you right now, I made that clip myself, and I watched it over and over. And I know Tanya. I worked with Tanya Consilla myself as a rookie cop in the 120 precinct. And I could see just her facial expression and her demeanor. And you could tell it's not organic. It's not natural. You can see she's posing for the camera. You can see her facial expression. It's so artificial. First of all, those are such leading questions. You're asking people how they feel when you have an entire entourage in your surrounding with cameras. What are they going to say when they're put on the spot? And obviously, you're not going to ask people that are going to give you an actual rebuttal and give you actual reluctance and resistance. You're placating for the camera. It's the most ridiculous thing. Now, I'll say this. If you want to be a chief and actually test what it actually feels like to ride the subways, then you know what? Disguise yourself. You ever watch that show, Undercover Boss? John, you ever see that show?
Yeah.
I think that's a great opportunity. Disguise yourself. Put on a regular T-shirt, pants, jacket, and disguise yourself as a regular person riding the subway. Don't have an armed security. Don't even notify your personnel. No one should know. Just ride the subway. See how you feel and watch how other people feel. That will be the only true test, not this charade.
Absolutely. And then I think a good bar to see how safe New York City is I always like to just see what the mayor has to say about it. So this is what he had to say about if the city's safe. And I think, you know, New Yorkers should hold on to the standard with everything. And then now, not only is this the mayor of New York City saying this, you have to think that now these people are cops. They have guns on them. They're with other cops, and they bring a complete entourage and security detail. So this is the bar that Eric Adams had set prior to his appointment.
I won't have a security detail. If the city is safe, the mayor shouldn't have a security detail with him. He should be walking the street by himself. I won't have a security detail. If the city is safe, the mayor shouldn't have a security detail with him.
So, I mean, just in that statement alone, the hypocrisy is there. I mean, if the city's safe, the mayor shouldn't have a security detail. Now, I think he's an absolute moron. I think that the mayor needs a security detail, but I don't think that high-ranking members of the New York City Police Department need a security detail. I fully remember that even during the 2020 riots, I fully remember one night I was doing 1PP security. We were doing the outer perimeters on, I forget what street it was, but we were doing the outer perimeters. And I fully remember seeing the Deputy Commissioner of Management and Budget walking all by herself, going to take the train at the height of insanity in 2020. Nobody knows who she is, you know, and that goes for the most part. I mean, Kaz Daughtry's making sure everybody knows who he is. But I still don't believe he needs a security detail. I don't.
I agree with you, John. Like you said, he's an idiot and he's a complete buffoon. Mayor Eric Adams constantly says things that his mouth just can't cash. He says things from both sides of his mouth. And it's obvious that when he says things, he doesn't actually mean them, because he said this at the beginning of his campaign before he was actually elected mayor, that when he becomes mayor, he won't need a security detail, that he's armed with a firearm. And if it's safe, he'll be able to walk freely and walk in peace. And we see something completely obvious. So again, if we compare it to what you said, so you set the standard. Again, to have a standard, I say this all the time, you have to have comparison. So we can compare what you said then to what you're doing now. And we see that you're walking with a complete entourage, a full security team, and we know that you would not be walking alone. So that means that it's not safe, because you said initially you would carry that out if the streets were safe. But we hear him from a complete buffoon, and it's a shame. It's really insulting and demeaning towards real New Yorkers. This is what New Yorkers are dealing with. They're doing it, dealing with an inadequate mayor and a complete inept NYPD. The NYPD was the goat of policing, not just nationwide, worldwide. The entire world is watching right now, and the curtain's been unveiled, and the whole world is saying, oh my God, this is the NYPD. I mean, this was the iconic police department that everyone looked to. And right now, they just look like a joke. I mean, it looks like just one big photo op. And we see Kaz Daughtry sitting perched up, talking to different subway riders. I mean, it's so organic. I mean, I'm wondering, too. I love to interview these people. If any of these people watch the podcast and tell us, did they actually set the camera up and tell you when to go? Because it looks so artificial to me. I don't think those conversations were organic at all. I think it's a big joke. It makes zero difference. If anything, it makes the NYPD more laughable than it was before. It's not going to have any change on crime, and they're not getting a real perception, which they love to say perception, of what's going on. But it does paint the picture of reality. And the reality is those train stations are a nightmare, because if they weren't, they wouldn't have these security teams with them walking in this manner. What do you think?
I mean, you nailed it. I mean, that's exactly what it is. You wouldn't need a security detail. You'd go down there with two or three people from your office. You'd walk in nonchalant, and it wouldn't be a big deal. And I do think it's a photo op. You know, we put out, I mean, I think the if you look at the thumbnail for the show in particular, you know, there's a bunch of chiefs in a decrepit train station standing in front of a green screen about to take a photo, because that's what everyone sees this as, a photo op. You know, if crime was down, there would be no need to do this. If the city was as safe as they say it is, if transit was as safe as they say it is, there'd be absolutely no reason to do this. But consistently, we just hear perception, fear, perception. We're battling perception. We're battling the public fear. You never hear them say what the strategy is to battle crime. Eric, let's play devil advocate for a minute, though. Let's play devil's advocate. They are being instructed by their boss, Kaz Daughtry, because I don't believe that any public relations firm would think that this is a good idea. I mean, I believe that this podcast, as well as the memes and the tweets that we've put out, debunked whatever amount of money they've spent on this in seconds. I think everyone is saying clowns. I mean, I'm not the only person saying clowns. You're not the only person saying clowns. I mean, you go on the internet in the sections where they actually allow comments, because most of the time the New York City Police Department shuts off comments on social media, which I think is actually wrong. I think that the public should be able to weigh in, whether it's being made fun of or things that are unfriendly to them. We have the right to freedom of speech in this country. People should have the right to criticize. And from what I see, they deserve criticism. But what do you think the effects of them doing that? Like, could you think of anything good, any good effects of them going out into the subway that day?
Absolutely not. I don't see any benefit to it. I honestly don't. You know, if I saw, you know, I think that we are pretty fair when it comes to this podcast. Are we critical of the upper echelon? Absolutely. But I don't see any benefit to it at all. Because once they set the tone that they did this public stunt, they now have to answer a lot of questions. Because anytime, I don't think that they're actually looking at the bigger picture ahead of what's going on now. They're looking at the short game. Because now, if crime does get out of control and they can't hide it anymore, to where they can't say the perception does not meet reality anymore or intertwine, the chiefs are going to make the argument of how busy they are and what they're doing out there to tackle police work. And the public's going to say, how busy could you be? You had the time to ride a train. So they're leaving themselves open for a lot of questions, and they're not looking at the long game. John Schell himself had put out, I believe it was on Twitter or LinkedIn, if you remember, it was a long message about what it is in the day in the life of being a chief in the New York City Police Department, of how busy his day is and how encompassed it is in doing police work. Is it really that busy that every chief had the opportunity to ride a train on the New York City subway to make sure that they actually coordinated? They didn't just ride the train, right? John, let's just say this. Chief Kemper didn't get up out of his chair and said, you know what? I'm going to go get on the subway right now, and I'll be back in an hour.
He actually wasn't even on the train. The one chief of transit was the only one that I didn't see. He actually wasn't
on the train. So the chief of transit is not on the subway. That's even more ironic. Exactly. But you know what's great? But yet, okay, so let's talk about Chief Madry. He's busy. He's out there busy studying, but he had to coordinate getting his people together, coordinate with Tiny Consilla, the time that they're going to get together, get all these the personnel together to do this stunt. How much time did that take away from police work that is necessary? What's going on? How much time did that hold back from everything else? I think this is idiotic. It's going to hurt them in the future. This is going to get thrown back in their faces. And again, I'm not trying to pick on Jeffrey Madry. I don't like to pick on personal things, but I watch him walk down the stairs, and he's looking disheveled. He's really look like he's hurt, and he's having a troubled time walking down these stairs. I think it's time that he just hangs it up and he retires. Let's be honest. Things happen. As we get older, this is a young man's job. It's a young woman's job. Sometimes we're just not suitable for this job anymore. I think he needs to hang it up. It's obvious that he's busy doing other stuff. You can see it. I can see that. It looks like he has some health problems, and I don't wish him bad. I wish him well. I think he's completely inadequate and inept right now, but I do wish him well. I don't wish anyone any health problems, but he looks like a weevil wobble. He could barely make it down the stairs. He's huffing and puffing, but yet he's making sure he stays on the job so that he could study and continue to make that pay. I think that's just completely wrong, where he can move on and we could get some young blood, some young fresh energy to replace him. I think sometimes that's what a good person is, by putting the city first, by putting people there that should be there. And sometimes you have to pass the torch and say, you know what? I'm too old for this position and my health is not there anymore. Go retire and go relax. But why are they still there? We talk about this all the time. John, you tell them.
Listen, I don't dislike Madry. Listen, nobody's perfect in the NYPD. Nobody. None of us. I'm not perfect. Eric's not perfect. I agree with you, Eric, but I'm afraid for the New York City Police Department if Jeffrey Madry leaves. I personally believe he is the most level-headed person there. He actually has the leeway to speak to the politicians, to the community. And I really, when I look at Kaz Daughtry, I see that blonde kid on Game of Thrones. Remember, he took over for the king. He was like crazy, and he was yes. like trying to behead everybody. I'm the king. Like, I'm personally afraid if Jeffrey Madry retires. Like, I agree with you 1,000%. I believe he's milking the city. I don't believe he's had a very shady career. He's had a lot of issues. But I'll say overall, I don't know a lot of people that don't like Jeffrey Madry. You know what I mean? I'll say more people like Madry than don't. And
well, he seems like a decent guy.
As far as, and he's level headed. He's not, I don't think he's the guy that's going to come in there and transfer you if you didn't call attention as soon as he walked in the room. You know, he's just not that guy. He's not. I mean, he created a monster. I mean, I'll fault him for that. He created a monster, and he let the monster unleash. And I think it's bigger than him now. But I do like him being there. But I agree with you. There is a time to hang it up. And honestly, when a kid like that's running the job, and you got 30 years on, you're a chief, and he's telling you, go out, spend half your day cleaning up 3 train stations. Then you're going to go on the train. You're going to do a photo op. You're going to have news cameras there. You're going to contact the news. These are all the social media flyers you're going to use. You're going to use this hashtag, Chiefs on the Train. You're going to make sure that the first letter of that hashtag, Chiefs is C and Chiefs is in capital. On is in capital. Because that's what happened, dude. And you're right. Like, how many hours did they put into doing that? Hundreds of man hours, if not thousands. What, like, if I have to estimate the cost, I'm going to say $3 million. $3 million to pull this publicity stunt. At least, probably more.
You know, with that being said, do you have the clip where Chief Michael Kemper speaks at the city council hearing? And And you put the tweet out there, and it's so funny that you put the tweet out there, because as I was watching, I was saying the same thing to myself. I'm nauseated with hearing him talk about perception and fear over and over. And you actually tweeted that, how nauseating it was. If this is exactly what's going on. They're doing everything they can to try to remove the ideology people have that they're afraid because they know it's unsafe, and they're trying almost like to like warp people's minds and tell them, no. What you feel is not real. This is all perception. But perception is reality, because it is really unsafe. It is.
Absolutely. So this clip that I'm about to play, this is New York City Council. This is Yousef Salam. He's the head of the public safety chair. Yousef Salam was a member of the Central Park Five. He has won millions of dollars after that. It's been reported that he was wrongfully convicted and spent time in jail wrongfully. So he asks very leading questions to Michael Kemper. And Michael Kemper doesn't pick up on it at all, because he's too busy, in my opinion, focused on what he needs to spin, the compassion he needs to show, the fake compassion that he needs to show, and what he needs to spin about perception and reality. I mean, this is like, we've been hearing this for 2 years now, perception and reality, perception and reality, perception and fear, and perception and fear, and perception. So Yousef Salam basically asks him, do you support defunding the police? And Mike Kemper doesn't pick up on it. The first question's a leading question. Mike Kemper should have been all over it. The assistant commissioner for deputy commissioner managed budget, Seth Severino, he picks up on it and he starts to answer, well, we're budgeting, we're doing this. He knows where the next question's going. And then you're going to see follow to the second question. There's going to be two questions here. The first question's a leading question. The second question is, do you support defunding the police? Because that's exactly what he asks him is, will you take money out of the NYPD budget and put it towards other services? That was the idea behind defund the police. Michael Kemper doesn't see it. I'm going to play the clip, and then, Eric, let's get your thoughts.
The department has stated in the past that funding isn't available to continue these programs in perpetuity. Once funding diminishes, we often see an increase in criminal activity in the subway in particular. It seems like increasing policing in the short term investment, in the short term, investing hundreds of millions of dollars of overtime doesn't create the systemic changes that we want to see for New York. Instead, the city could invest this funding into an effort to provide appropriate services to those individuals who perpetuate the largest portion of these crimes. So my question regarding that is, do you agree that an increase in funding for mental health and community services would assist in decreasing crime in the subway system?
So I'll answer that question. And I would say personally, there is some truth to that. Absolutely, yes. And why I would say that is, when looking at the subway system, it's so unique and nuanced when it comes to public safety. The mental health issue or the crime issue or the issues in the subway system that really affect perception and fear and crime. When talking about mental health, we could start with perception and fear. When our riders enter the system and they come across someone that's in midst of a mental health crisis, if you will, scares them. It's the unknown. So it's directly linked to perception and fear and crime. You know, more often than not, we find individuals who suffer from a mental illness, victims of crimes, and committing crimes. So there's a direct correlation between not only the perception and fear, but crime, and ultimately spending time would certainly help people, you know, at the end of the day, find the help that these people need. If I answered your question, I hope so, sir.
Oh, absolutely. I have a follow-up to that. Would you be amenable to diverting some of the resources that they are receiving for this plan to those causes?
Just to clarify, from a budgetary perspective, we're constantly working with OMB to adjust our overtime budget. As we discussed earlier, there's a year-to-date spend versus our current budget, and that difference is quite small, and we still have the rest of the fiscal year. So there's no true funding to divert. It's just a matter of where the spending takes place.
So just hearing that about diverting, look, public safety and reducing crime and allowing our riders to travel from point A to point B free from being crime, this is what they deserve, and certainly they need to feel safe. If you're asking me my honest, personal, under oath opinion, more effort needs to be spent on the topic of mental health, particularly in the subway system, yes.
If anyone's wondering, I'm counting how many times he says perception and fear. So what do we know? This, I can tell you this, just by his demeanor, by what he says, no matter what the question was, he already had this plan in his head that this is what he was going to answer. It didn't matter what the question was, because he didn't listen to the question at all. That question had nothing to do with perception and fear. But somehow he already had it in his head that he has to insert perception fear. That's what the NYPD chiefs are doing. Whatever happens right now, insert perception fear. Whatever happens, insert perception fear. Oh, we had a subway incident, perception fear. And they started with John Shell selling this idea that we have to change our perception fear. So the New York City is made up of 8 million people. 8 million people have no idea what they're talking about. But the 20 some more chiefs of the New York City Police Department, they know exactly what's going on compared to 8 million people that actually ride the subway. Don't ride the subway with an entourage of security men with firearms and large presence of uniformed members. This is just complete ridiculous. First of all, he didn't even listen to the question. And I like the part that you pointed out exactly. The OMB guy got it. He caught on and he tried to explain how the budget is being allocated for these services so that the police department can address it. Michael Kemper didn't listen at all. What Michael Kemper said is that we could divert these services to other services to handle issues with mental health because the police department is not capable to handle it. So in his soft-spoken manner in the question, Michael Kemper completely was not listening because he was so prepared to insert perception of fear. He didn't listen to this question at all. I think a complete epic fail on the answer. He tried to sound like he's compassionate and that he's empathetic. I just thought it was an epic fail. It's embarrassing. Just constantly to the point of nausea talking about this perception of fear. That's why I'll go back just to say that I will agree with you in a sense when you talk about Jeffrey Madry, that I do believe it's time for him to pass the torch. I do think it's time for him to retire. But what I do see from him is that he has, I do believe that deep down, he has more compassion for the community. And you could tell in some things that he says. There was a lady that she only sees the chiefs ride the subways where white people go. She doesn't see them go where black people go in the hood. She goes, well, I live in the hood. I don't see them going there. And one of the reporters asked Jeffrey Madry, what do you think about this? And I liked his answer. So that's why I said he had a better answer. He said, well, you know what? If she feels that way, then I need to do more. Rather than trying to defend it, he actually said, okay, then I'll do my job and figure out how to address this lady's issues. That's not what Kemper's doing. That's not what Kaz is doing. All they keep doing is defending perception and reality, defending perception and fear, defending the NYPD instead of addressing the issues. And when he tried to address the question, epic fail.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it was disgraceful, honestly. Like, you're not listening to the question. You're there to just continuously put this propaganda piece. They might as well replace him with K5. Get the robot out of the broom closet. Put Kemper's name on him. Let's just call him Chief of NYPD Transit. And just have him be... It's perception and fear. Reality is real, but perception and fear. Crime is down, because that's all he was doing. And he didn't even listen to the question. And as an NYPD chief in 2024, 4 years after Dermot Shea 1,000% supported defunding the police, you now, Michael Kemper, said, yes, I support defunding the police. I support defunding the NYPD and giving this money to these not-for-profits who, by the way, get $1 billion every year to do exactly the work we're talking about. And all of this money goes out unaccounted for. The programs have there's zero transparency in these programs, how they work, how we prove they're successful. The public has no idea how this money's being spent. So Michael Kemper believes that the NYPD should be defunded to give the money, to give some of their money to more of these not-for-profits who are shrouded in mystery, who are not transparent at all, and who have been largely a huge, epic failure. $1 billion is basically, in my opinion, getting shoveled into an oven and burned and lit on fire. It's going to friends and family. It's the friends and family fund, because it's not helping the homeless. It's not helping the mentally ill. We're spending billions of dollars. And Michael Kemper, because he was so wrapped up on saying perception and fear, said, yes, under oath, my honest opinion is yes, more money needs to be spent. Well, great. I'm glad you feel that more money needs to be spent. Like, you don't even know how the original money spent. So how would you know that more money needs to spend? How do you know we're not lighting money on fire, Mike? You don't know any of that. You don't. You're just there to be a propaganda piece. He's a failure. John Schell's a failure. If anybody should step down, I think it's them first. I think Majory's much less of a puppet. He's much less of a puppet. I hear him in that meeting later on. They're talking about the protest settlement agreement. And he comes in and he's like, the lightest touch, Madam Speaker. The lightest touch. This is Majory. And that's what I tell my guys, you know. And then someone goes in the crowd, goes nuts. I believe I heard Relly Rel. I heard them throwing him out. He started cursing. It was definitely him in one of the clips. I don't know if it was that one. But, you know. But I almost understand that he's just saying, like, listen, we're not out there beating people up. We're giving people their room to breathe. I mean, I think that you see it every night since October 7th. The NYPD has been hands off in these Manhattan protests with the leftists. They've been hands on with Scott Lobato. They've been hands on in Staten Island. But in Manhattan, they have not been.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because right away I was going to jump on it when you said that. They're hands off every night. But you're Scott Lobato and you throw a pizza, they swoop in right away. But funny that you say that, right? When we talk about conservatives or common sense, we hear the city council, obviously this was a complete setup and it was a bloodbath to destroy the NYPD at this council hearing, which they did. They accomplished. Vicky Paladino did her best to support the police department, and rightfully so. I agree with her that the police department deserves respect for the hard work that they do. But when it comes to the weak appointed management of this particular administration, I don't feel sorry for them. I would have felt sorry for other administrations. Yes. Did I find them completely impervious to mistakes and fault? No. I didn't think the Ray Kelly administration was perfect. I didn't think Keechan Sewell's was perfect or Bratton. But they were far off better then than they are better now. And I believe that they deserve respect and the rank and file along with it. But this particular administration, absolutely, they don't deserve any respect and admiration. So I understand and I respect that Vicky Paladino was fighting for them. But this bloodbath, they deserve it, because they're not just acting like chiefs on a train. They're acting like clowns on a train. This is embarrassing. What is the real solution? Riding a train one time on an orchestrated event does not change anything. What are the actual solutions? It sounds great for the average person out there, the layman's person that doesn't understand police work. What we're doing right now by removing 1,000 police officers from other spots at a police department to fill these holes in transit, yes, it may bring crime down in transit, but we're displacing other crime. What happens is, when it comes to crime, ultimately, the NYPD, and when you're short manpower like we are right now, imagine people watching this. It's like if you had a barrel that you could fill up with water, but we drill holes on both sides. And as you put the water in, we only have so many hands, and you're trying to cover these holes, and the water's still leaking. So we hold one spot, and the water comes out another one. We hold another spot, and then the water comes out another one. That's what's happening now. We hold one spot, and then we take these cops and we put them in another spot, and now the water's leaking from that spot. So that's what's happening. We'll bring crime down in one spot, but it's displacing crime in other areas. So this is unsustainable, and this is not good for the long term. We have not heard long-term solutions. We have not heard an actual plan. We need the leaders of the NYPD who are not showing any or exhibiting any signs of leadership to be innovative, to actually sit down and get real solutions. Just by asking everyday people, do you feel safe? That's what this all has come down to with them. Do you feel safe? You know, what if there was some crazy person that no matter what was happening, they still feel safe? Does it matter why you ask them? Let's talk about the truth of what's actually happened, what's actually happening there, what we see, what the crime stats are. If you didn't have these 1,000 police officers, we wouldn't have this 40% decrease. It would be back to those original numbers.
Yeah, so they're robbing from Peter to pay Paul. They're taking 1,000 officers out of their duties that they do every day. So those areas are going to fall, whether it be cases that need to be investigated, whether it be video that needs to be reviewed, whatever it may be, whatever their function is in the NYPD, it's obviously a vital one. Or Eric Adams said he was going to do away with the non-vital positions, right? And then admin, right? That he said that over and over again, yet he created more of them. I think he actually gave cops to sanitation too. He created a whole detail and gave them to sanitation. I don't know for what. They don't take any enforcement action. He gave cops to like some other thing where like you could submit for funding with the mayor's office. He's like giving cops away left and right to really non-enforcement things that don't even involve the police department. So, I mean, I think he's failed at even being able to identify what's administrative and what's enforcement and what's necessary to have a uniformed in and what's not. But so at this point, well, I'm going to say that all of these are essential functions in the NYPD. You have officers, so you're robbing from them. Those functions are going down. What do you see because of that? You also see the state troopers are down there, and you see the state troopers are down there, and you see the National Guard's down there. And like myself and Eric have said over and over again, that is to fight terrorism. There is obviously a large threat. We've seen what happened in Russia. We've seen what happened in Russia. And I mean, it's clear as day that we're worried about that happening here as too. The same day that the Russian threat went out, the U.S. Embassy put out that it's unsafe in Russia, March 7th. That was the same day. March 7th was the day that the National Guard and state troopers got deployed to the subway stations. So with all this, with flooding the trains, with all of these people, you know, they're in the high-profile trains. The 1,000 cops are spread out throughout the subway system daily and spread out. We have seen a drop in crime, a significant drop in crime. But like Eric's saying, it's unsustainable. It's artificial because, first of all, the amount of money that they're spending is insane. The amount and a lot of these guys aren't even getting overtime. They have to do it on straight time, but there are a lot of guys still doing it on overtime. So even with that, you're losing the man hours where you needed them, where that person's essential function's happening. So now they're going to make it up on the other end. So even if they're not getting overtime that day, they're going to get overtime on the other end because they were there that day. So you're really not alleviating overtime, and the overtime will go up significantly. It will continue to rise as it's been every year. You're going to see rise in overtime. You're going to see less cops apt to take action. You're going to see cops sitting there tired, looking at their phone, dazed out. They look like they're not in the game because they're tired. They're working. They're working 6-7 days a week, 14, 15-hour days. And for what? To get an artificial drop in crime. And the minute the summer hits and crime starts to spike on New York City streets, they're going to pull them out. And guess what? Organically, crime's going to come rushing back in, and it's going to come rushing back in big because these are not actual fixes. They're Band-Aids, as Eric explained.
John, there's a clip I want you to pull up. If you could pull it up and we could explain it and explain why I want to get into it. So the actual, do you have the actual clip of Mayor Eric Adams offering jobs to drug dealers at Burger King?
I don't have a clip of it. I'll find something.
You have the meme that you made? Well, the reason why I want to go into that. So I will say this, right? Because I'm a firm believer there's no bad troops, only bad leaders. And ultimately, I hold Kaz Daughtry, John Schell, these other figures, as leaders of the New York City Police Department. But when we actually talk about leadership, it's owned at different levels. So they are the troops when it comes to Mayor Eric Adams. I think Mayor Eric Adams ultimately is the leader of this entire mirage. And I do hold him responsible and fully accountable. In essence, I do hold them responsible and I do blame them. But the same token, I can't entirely blame them. Why? They're working for New York City Mayor Eric Adams, who's extremely progressive. And at this point, they don't know what they're supposed to do anymore. They don't know if they should be doing enforcement or what the vision should be for New York City anymore. How could they know? When the New York City mayor himself pulls a publicity stunt as this one, is so idiotic, it's laughable. You would think this is a Saturday Night Live skit. What are they supposed to understand? Here, Mayor Eric Adams is breaking bread. He's having lunch, sitting down with drug dealers at Burger King and offering them jobs. And John, you had put out a tweet. It's exactly what I was thinking. Didn't we used to lock drug dealers up? I mean, but now we sit down and offer them jobs. And that's why I put out a tweet in response also. It's great to stay illegal in New York City. If you're illegal in New York City, you're going to get offered a credit card. You're going to get funded. If you're a criminal in New York City, you're going to get other services offered to you. You could even become a squatter. Why would you actually follow the law in New York City? Why would you pay your fare in transit? Why would you own a home? Why don't you just go out there and squat? Why would you follow the law? And what kind of job is he going to offer them? Is he going to offer them applications for the New York City Police Department? I mean, this is absolutely idiotic. How is Kaz Daughtry supposed to learn? What should be his vision when the mayor himself is pulling stunts just like this?
I think you nailed that. I mean, this is another publicity stunt, just like Kaz's Chiefs on the Train stunt. This is mayor in open air drug bazaar stunt. Like, this is, it's ridiculous. So Burger King's getting sued for $15 million. This Burger King's like right around the block from City Hall. It's right there. And basically they're allowing an open air drug bazaar. Now this tenant group is suing Burger King for $15 million. I personally think they should be suing Mayor Eric Adams and the New York City Police Department and DA Alvin Bragg, as well as the New York City Council. That's who they really should be suing for allowing a lawless society and allowing a place where crime like this could flourish. So instead of having narcotics set up there and arrest the drug dealers and clear this out and say, this isn't happening anymore, we're not having loitering, working with the business to remove the people who are loitering and the vagrants and people who are trespassing and people who are selling and using drugs. Instead of doing that, Eric Adams goes there and he offers them jobs. And what Eric Adams doesn't understand is New York City is not his own personal company. He's not the CEO of New York City. There's labor law in New York City that people have to take civil service tests. They get on a list. There's a proper way to do things. Now, I know Eric Adams never enforced the law, nor does he understand it. He uses it to hide behind when he needs it for his political gain. Like, as he was saying, he just recently changed Right to Shelter. He didn't change Right to Shelter. He sat down with the Legal Aid Society. He made an agreement with the Legal Aid Society. Legal Aid Society doesn't make law. They don't change law. They have nothing to do with law. So the whole thing, another publicity stunt sham. Conservative media is all over it. Oh, he changed Right to Shelter law. So here you go. Another time, he doesn't understand anything. He goes there and he offers them jobs. What jobs, Eric, did you offer them? That's what I'd like to know. What jobs? Who is going to get bumped? Who are these drug dealers and criminals going to get bumped in front of? I think I know who. The white kids from Staten Island, the white kid from Brooklyn, the white kid from Queens, the white kid from Long Island, right? Because that's what we've seen in this administration. We've seen that if you're black, you're right. If you're a criminal, you're better. And you're going to get bumped ahead of everything. And I mean, the racism just shines through on this guy. And I made this meme and I put a speech bubble in there and I wrote, I was progressive before the term progressive actually existed. I didn't make that up. That's an actual quote from Eric Adams. He said that. So anyone that tells me he's a moderate, no, he is not.
It's also interesting to me too that Sal Greco is wrongfully terminated for supposed criminal association, but Eric Adams is sitting down and having lunch with known drug dealers to supposedly get them jobs? I would find that that's on the lines of criminal association. Why is that okay? But Sal Greco can't have a friendship with Roger Stone, who, by the way, was pardoned, who, by the way, was originally charged for crimes of witness tampering to Congress, which is not a street-level crime, not something that affects a local New York City police officer. But yet he could sit down and break bread with drug dealers at the same location that they're selling drugs? I mean, it's laughable. I mean, they're even offering him to smoke weed. They even find it funny. This whole thing is just it's a big joke. How are we supposed to take him seriously? Is he really going to make another term? Do people actually look for him for guidance? Do they think this is the man to save New York City? This is insanity to me. This is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, what kind of jobs could... Like I said, all from jobs be New York City cops. Is that what we're going to do? What? They're selling drugs. Are they maybe I don't know, maybe they're members of the Supreme Team.
About 3 years ago, I was still on. I was a sergeant. I'll never forget what he said to me. He goes, "I'm telling you." He goes, soon enough, part of the DAT checklist, and what the DAT checklist is, if somebody qualifies for a desk appearance ticket, you'll go through a checklist when they're arrested to make sure that you could give them a desk appearance ticket and not put them through the system for the night. And what he said is part of that checklist is going to be, did you offer them to take the exam for the NYPD? And I honestly don't think we're far from that. Like we all laughed about it. And I was like, yeah, I was like, you're probably right. I wouldn't disagree with you. I wouldn't bet against you. He goes, I'm telling you, we're a few years away from it. I'm telling you, this is the way this is all going. Doesn't make sense. Everything that's happening doesn't make sense. And now here we are. But this one, they don't even have to take the test. Eric Adams just going to give you a job because he thinks New York City is his own private slush fund. He believes he's the CEO and he could just do with what he pleases. Why we see a detective who's now a deputy commissioner / uniform chief. You know, none of it makes sense because it doesn't have to make sense because the guy doesn't follow any laws, particularly campaign finance laws. He has a big problem with, and everybody around him has a big problem with it. I mean, you know, Eric Adams, you're getting indicted. I mean, that's all I see. I see people getting indicted left and right. Or you're turning Fed witness, one or the other, because he's got more problems building up than anything. And again, another publicity stunt. He went down and break bread. He didn't walk out of Gracie Mansion and go there. No, he sent about 30 cops out there, and you see them actually if you look at the photos closely, plus his security detail, which is the largest security detail out of any New York City mayor ever, including Rudy Giuliani, who, by the way, took down the mafia in New York City, who ran everything in New York City. And this guy's got a bigger security detail than him. Why? If anybody should have had a 24/7 huge security detail, should have been Rudy Giuliani, not this guy.
You know, it's really interesting that we see this unveil in such a way. It was funny because I was watching on Netflix the other day, Death Wish was on. And it's funny, right, that we this whole time we're experiencing this stuff that it's about this criminal first society and about pandering to the black and brown community to showing that we're being fair. But what's interesting, and I didn't even realize, and I've seen that movie so many times, but it's from 1976. And you can see the trains are just horrendous in comparison to comparison to now, as bad things are. But it's interesting, even in that movie, right, because, people commit crime based on opportunity of what the politicians allow. But even when you watch that movie, it wasn't about race. It was about crime. Because you watch that movie, most of the perpetrators in that movie, they were white guys. You know, it's funny because they're always defending this whole ideology that the police department is in pursuit of black and brown. And we need black and brown officers. And we need officers from these areas to protect and actually dress the black and brown community. But it comes down to, ultimately, this all comes down to politicians. Mayor Eric Adams is a big part of this problem, these progressive ideology. If they're out there selling drugs, they should be arrested, not offered jobs. If people are riding the subway and they're not paying their fare, they should be arrested. That's what the police department does. That's what the mayor does as executive of New York City, is by keeping this city safe. Didn't he say it himself? Safety is the key to prosperity. But again, his mouth and his words never match his actions. This is what Mayor Eric Adams is about. He's just a two-talking step man. Nothing matches what he says. But what I'd like to ask you this, John, honestly, I want to hear your thoughts on this. What do you think Kaz and the other upper echelon of the police department thought they would accomplish from this, if they thought they would accomplish anything? Or do you think this was specifically to enhance their own careers?
Again, I don't have any inside information, but I think that this had nothing to do with a public relations firm. I think this was the brainchild of Kaz Daughtry. I think Chiefs on the Train is his brainchild. I think that many of the people that you see posting those photos said how stupid this is, told their wives and their families how stupid it was, told their staff how stupid it was, and they went along with it. I think it's the brainchild of Kaz Daughtry. I think it makes absolutely no sense. It's pandering. It's social media. You could tell that he's very hopped up on social media. John Schell is his little puppet. They think that having followers and getting likes and reshares actually is real life. They think like they are focused on this social media world. Now, I'm big on social media, Eric. You're big on social media, right? I mean, it's an outlet, but we're critics. It's totally different. We're not public servants anymore. I mean, I never had one like when I was a public servant because I wasn't on social media. And I don't really believe that they should be either. Like, you know, and I don't put out things for likes, and neither does Eric. Because if we did, we wouldn't be talking about the things that we were talking about. I mean, we're talking about a lot of things that people are scared to like, but they agree with it, you know, and that's what differentiates this podcast from the mainstream media, you know. So I really think the goal was, hey, let's just get out there. Let's get this on social media. You know, we look like idiots right now. Crime is down, but everyone sees what's happening. Crime's down, yes. Statistically, crime's down for the 28 days. Statistically, crime is down for the week to date. Statistically speaking, crime is trending up, and it's trending up significantly because they're getting these small, small reductions in crime that are just followed by high spikes in crime. And we're never going back down to those 2018 levels. I don't want to say never, we will. But just not under this administration, just not with these policies. This should have been all these man hours should have been spent fighting crime. I honestly think this was the stupidest idea. And I really do believe, I believe they spent millions of dollars to do this. And I believe that we debunked it in 0.3 seconds by making some memes for free and doing this podcast. Like it's a complete show. It makes zero sense. Any of it. I don't even know what the goal was other than I'm going to get out and this is my idea and you guys are going to do it. I'm sending the Chiefs on the train. That's what I'm doing.
Like John said, social media is a great tool. We're critics. So it could be used in different facets. I think social media is powerful, especially when it comes to a podcast like this one. It allows us to get out messaging. It allowed us to voice our opinions, to be critics, to have communication between fans, supporters, and also haters. It's really a gateway for all different avenues. But when I think it comes to the police department, social media is great when it comes to messaging, communication, and actually really to show the vision of the police department as a group, as a whole. But I think what the problem with social media when it comes to the police department, it's also allowed and permitted the immaturity, the inadequacy to come out. Because what we see people like Kaz Daughtry individualizing himself, individualizing Jeffrey Madry, individualizing Tiny Kinsella, trying to make it about those people. It really should be about the police department as a whole, of what the police department is doing to address public safety. But it's become about, well, this is Kaz Daughtry's moment. This is Tiny Kinsella's moment. This is Jeffrey Madry. And they're parading themselves around like celebrities. It's about themselves. It's about what they are doing. And it's not about the police department. They want to tell people it's about the police department, but it's not. And that's what it comes down to, a level of immaturity, because they want to say, look at me, look at me. They're not saying, hey, look at us. Or if anything, look at them. And when I say look at them, look at the boots on the ground. Look at the cops, what they're doing. But they're pointing at themselves. They're making it about themselves. And that's why I think this is about individualization of weak upper management. Again, you know what? That's a great – I'm glad you brought up this topic. So let's shift gears, right? Because I think this is a great opportunity we should talk about the indemnification of Mayor Eric Adams when it comes to his sexual assault case. I think I've mentioned on this prior podcast, and just anyone that knows me, that I had to dip into my own pocket to pay a person of interest that I encountered on the street, stop, question, frisk, based on reasonable suspicion, a level 3 tier stop that was substantiated by the Civilian Complaint Review Board. And due to that, I was found liable, civilly liable, and I was not indemnified. So the city picked up a portion of the lawsuit, and I also had to pay out of my own pocket. But here, Mayor Eric Adams is sued for an incident that allegedly happened 30 years prior. No way to prove or disprove that case. And Mayor Eric Adams is being indemnified for an allegation where he was off duty in regards to a potential sexual assault case. And it also now reflects on other cases where Timothy Pearson, who is a former inspector who has close ties to Mayor Eric Adams, he's accused of a sexual assault case. Will his case now be indemnified? He's now set the tone. Will everyone else's case be indemnified? Will I be reimbursed for what I had to pay? Because my case was on duty. I was not indemnified. This has created a new genre and something that we need to discuss when it comes to indemnification. Mayor Eric Adams has now set the new standard, or if there is no new standard, this is a just complete blight on corruption.
Yeah, so Sal Greco posted about this, right, because he's been pointing out the hypocrisy in the NYPD as well ever since he was wrongfully terminated for being friends of Roger Stone and a strong supporter of Donald Trump. So he puts a tweet out, and he basically labels out what's going on here is that supposedly this sergeant Ray Pearson, who's a retired NYPD inspector, but I believe he retired without a good guy letter, if I'm not mistaken. And I believe he retired while under investigation, and he doesn't even carry a gun. He was also involved in an incident recently outside of a homeless shelter where he went to go in and a female staffer accused him of choking her. However, he called the NYPD and she was arrested. We still have not seen the cameras or the body cameras from that day. He was wearing an NYPD jacket, although he is no longer a member of the NYPD, which is what we know as criminal impersonation of a police officer, nor has he been charged of that. So we believe he was under investigation for that. But for this, he's being accused of unwanted sexual harassment by this sergeant. So the sergeant, NYPD Sergeant Roxanne Ludeman, says that Pearson was sexually harassing her. Now, she reported it. She said she met with investigators, and she even met with Chief Jeffrey Madry, and he did nothing. Really reminds me a lot of Latina Brown's case, where Latina tells Eddie Caban, the police commissioner, that she's being sexually harassed by her boss, I forget his name, but the guy in community affairs, Brian Adams, who claims to be the cousin of Adrian Adams, the New York City speaker, and also a cousin of Eric Adams. Now, I don't know if that's true, but that's what he claims, as per our sources in the NYPD. So he sexually harassed Latina Brown. Latina Brown, while working for the NYPD, reports this to the police commissioner, the figurehead police commissioner, Edward Caban, and he does nothing. He does nothing. Same here. This was reported. So this is a culture. This doesn't appear to be a safe environment for women. You know, we saw that cop that was like involved with having sex with multiple partners. I forget what town it was. She just won a $500,000 lawsuit for her like being passed around by all these guys in this department. And what she said is, I didn't really know any better. And they were like kind of abused me. They abused their authority to get me into doing it. I believe if she was in the NYPD, she'd probably be a first grade detective working on one of the top floors of the New York City Police Department in One Police Plaza. She'd probably have a budding career. But if she did report it, it would have went nowhere, the same as what we continuously see with all of these women, that these men continuously abuse their authority. And I always said it, and I still say it, if not for the police department, some of these guys would never feel the warmth of a woman, because, you know, now, and they think they're playboys now. You know, it's beyond sickening to me. You know, I used to see them, You see the guy makes sergeant. He always takes girls as his driver. He makes lieutenant. He takes the girls as a driver. He makes CO, the girls as driver. I mean, I always had big, ugly guys drive me. Anybody that knows me, I just wasn't into it. I didn't want the accusations, and I just didn't think it was appropriate. And I for damn sure never would use my authority to try to hit on one of my subordinates. I felt I was better than that. And even when my subordinates tried with me, I just was never into it. I tried to just look at it like they don't really like me. They like what I represent at this moment in time.
Well, I just want to say we had Latina Brown on this show. She's this community advocacy, really intelligent woman. We support her very much. She's become a friend of the podcast. So Latina, if you watch this, we support you. And you know, absolutely. What the claims and allegations that she made are just completely horrendous, that her claims were never taken seriously. And she was the authority that was abused over is absolutely ridiculous. So anyone else, any other woman in that position, this is an infectious culture. It needs to stop this abuse of authority. But I think also, like I said, again, we really need to talk about indemnification, because that also bears the question. Now, Timothy Pearson is in the circle of Eric Adams. This is a case of sexual harassment. Is he going to be indemnified just on the same manner that Mayor Eric Adams? Why not? If Mayor Eric Adams could be indemnified for a case that potentially happened 31 years ago that we can't prove or disprove, that happened, the allegation that it happened off duty, I mean, what's the difference now? Again, like I said, but to have a standard, you need to have comparisons. Again, I'm completely perturbed by the fact that I had to dip into my own pocket for taking police action. And even in my administrative trial, the judge had deviated from the Civilian Complaint Review Board. Still found me guilty, but they found they took less days than the CCRB had asked for and said that they didn't see that there was any bias on my part. It was just a matter of if they could agree on the legality of the tiered stop, on whether I met the legal ramifications for level 3 or level 2, and this was back and forth. But I had to dip into my own pocket. The city dipped into their pocket to pay, and I had to dip into my pocket. But that was for on duty, and there was no malice. That's for doing police work. These are sexual allegations that have nothing to do with the scope of employment of police work. We get Mayor Eric Adams is being indemnified. And what could this cost the city? I mean, this could be $1 million case just by the work into it. And then if there's a lawsuit, this could be $10, $20 million. I mean, this is by far more egregious than my case alone. What are your thoughts on indemnification? Do you believe that if Mayor Eric Adams is being indemnified, so should Timothy Pearson?
No, again, I think that it's a misuse of funds. I think it's official misconduct on the part of New York City Mayor Eric Adams to be represented by city council. I believe he's, again, abusing his authority, because we see a culture of abuse of authority. Who's in charge of city council ultimately? Who's in charge of corporation council ultimately? New York City Mayor Eric Adams is in charge of corporation council, right? So her boss, the head of corporation council, is telling her, I need to be represented. Guess what she's going to do? Find any which way to represent him, which I believe it's completely wrong. And I believe it's official misconduct, which is a felony crime on the part of New York City mayor. I believe that this is just yet another example of how he doesn't understand the law, and he doesn't know. And he's working with impunity. So I don't believe Eric Adams should be indemnified. I also don't believe that Deputy Mayor Pearson should be indemnified. And I'll go a step further. I don't even believe that Deputy Mayor Pearson is a person of strong character. And I don't believe he should be a deputy mayor of anything in New York City. Now, he has sexual, but he has these sexual allegations against him. I believe that he and Eric Adams should be held to the same standard that the captain, that the lieutenant was just a few months ago, who was accused of sexual harassment from one of his subordinates. But I don't believe that either of them, I don't believe that that lieutenant will get the same type of investigation that this sergeant is going to get, that Pearson's going to get against him, that Eric Adams going to get against him. These are, I mean, again, the Eric Adams one's different, right? Because that's a long time ago. But Pearson's is live. It's now, right? It's not years ago. It's happening right as we speak. This is a case that could be investigated and proven. But I don't believe that the investigators will work diligently like they did in the case for that, that PAA who was being sexually harassed by a whole lieutenant to get him fired and to see whatever is going to happen now civilly. He was not indemnified. He was not represented by New York City. I believe that Ray Pearson should be held to that same standard. So I don't think that he should be indemnified at all. I think that he, if he is, again, that's official misconduct. And I believe that his investigation and what she's complaining about is exactly what we're saying, is that when you investigate, when you make an allegation against high-ranking officials in New York City or the New York City Police Department, there truly is no one to go to, because at the end of the day, Eric Adams is their boss, right? Eric Adams is not a fan of this podcast. Eric Adams, a big fan of Ray Pearson. Eric Adams more than likely is going to do whatever he could do to get Ray Pearson indemnified. And again, I believe that'll be a second charge of official misconduct.
You know, it's funny, John, you and I talked about how in the past that former mayor Rudy Giuliani said that corruption is the default position for New York City. And, you know, I tried to evaluate that to myself. I said, well, why? Why is that? And you know what? More and more as we delve into this podcast and we had to make a complaint ourselves, that has exposed itself. It's exposed itself exactly what we're talking about here. Mayor Eric Adams is the boss of Corporation Council. So exactly that. It's going to default to corruption. Corporation Council is going to make sure he's indemnified. Ultimately, he's the boss. So this is a complete epic fail. And again, just as John and I made a complaint with the internal affairs of the New York City Police Department, which includes higher-ups of the New York City Police Department, who are the same people that oversee the Internal Affairs Bureau. So how could that be a proper investigation? What John and I are exposing is exactly what Mayor former Mayor Rudy Giuliani said, is that corruption is the default position. And it's the default position for the NYPD. We see it because the Internal Affairs cannot do a proper investigation when certain ranks are part of that investigation itself. It should be done by an outside entity. Absolutely, we need an outside entity that does investigations for these things, just as Civilian Complaint Review Board, which is an outside entity. So I just think it's just a complete epic fail.
Absolutely. I mean, that's exactly what it is. He's in charge of everything. So there really is no one to go to at the end of the day. I mean, we should have a federal government to rely on. I believe he is currently being investigated by the feds, but I believe if it was efficient, he would already have been removed from mayor about a year and 6 months ago. I also believe that if it was efficient, Bill de Blasio would have got arrested 2 years into his administration. So, and he didn't. And he actually serviced another term after that, which is, you know, another thing because I always said, if that was me or you, Eric, we'd be in jail for 20 years if we did what de Blasio did. So, you know, there is a different standard. There's two different standards. There's one for people and one for politicians. Speaking of Eric Adams, another thing I think we should bring up before we get out of here is he recently made a statement, and he said, he was at a town hall and he said, don't listen to people from Wisconsin tweeting about the NYPD trying to tell you what New Yorkers want. Don't listen to those people. So we made this meme. It's the map of Florida's behind us. You see Sal Greco pointing. Eric Dims pointing to his retirement plaque, and I'm there giving a thumbs up. And at the top of it, it says greetings from Wisconsin, because clearly Eric Adams was talking about us.
clearly he didn't do land navigation class in school. Cause if you look at the map, Wisconsin's north, we are south, brother. That's where the birds go in the summer, in the winter for the nice, beautiful weather. You go to Florida. But that's okay. Listen, if he wants to try to, you know, give a mirage that he's talking to someone else, but at the same time send subliminal messages that he's talking about us, just say our names. It's okay. Again, I've been saying this for the longest time. The New York City Police Department, along with Mayor Eric Adams, has been having an open public conversation with this podcast through subliminal messages. Just already just come out and say the finest unfiltered in Sal Greco. It's no problem. We know that you're talking right to us. We are the critics. We're not going anywhere. We are a staple here to stay. I can tell you that right now. We're confident. We have been run through the mill. We've been attacked by the New York City PBA. We've been attacked by the NYPD CRT team, along with the weight of the upper echelon of the New York City Police Department. We've been threatened by mobsters. We've been threatened by active members with pictures of duct tape and zip ties. We get prank phone calls we were getting on a daily basis. We got prank phone calls through text messages. We got pranks on DMs. What else can you do? We're getting quite numb and desensitized to it. So we're here to stay. So from Wisconsin, we love you. The finest unfiltered. The show goes on. You got a green screen behind you because you're acting, and we're giving it to you real.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and, you know, I just think he said Wisconsin because, you know, he had said it before. He's like, there are people working against me that don't want to see me get a second term. And I'm not going to mention. And the reporter's like, who? And he's like, I'm not going to mention any names because I'm not going to get them any bigger than they already are. So that's exactly why he said Wisconsin and not Florida. He has a little bit more PR skills than his boy Kaz, who, you know, said, oh, there's some retired guys in Florida, out of state. Excuse me, he said out of state. But so that's what he was talking. It's the same thing. So, like, you know, you see, I'm going to start calling Kaz Jong-un, but I think I'm going to call him Little Eric, too, because he really has the same traits as Eric Adams. You know, he really does. You know, I could see it in him. I could, like, if he was just a better speaker, he's Eric Adams, you know, like the way he acts, the publicity stunts, his arrogance level. I mean, it's all there. It's all there. So, I mean, you know, we've been actually turning people away from the podcast that, like, if they still have a significant other on the job or they have any ties to the police department, because we don't know what they're going to do, you know, and we don't want to put anyone in a bad situation. So we've been turning people away, like, hey, listen, let all this cool down. Let's see where this goes. But yeah, clearly there's a target on this podcast just because we're giving real analysis that they agree with. I mean, I think that most of the people that'll sit there and shake their head to Kaz and go, yeah, those guys don't know what they're talking about. They might not agree with everything, but I think they'll agree with what most of what we're saying. So, you know, I mean, that's it. I'm more than happy to continuously to do this. And I'm not really intimidated by any of this stuff anymore at this point. You know, I hear a rumor that there's criminal investigation into us. I really don't care. My hands are clean. My conscience is clean. I sleep very well at night. I put my faith in God and in the truth. And at the end of the day, whatever comes at me, I'm going to face it head on the same way that I'm sitting here on this podcast with a smile on my face, being respectful. I'm going to continue to do it that way. I'm going to continue, and it won't deter me at all. I'll continue to do everything. Eric will continue to do everything. We'll continue to do this podcast if anything, and we'll continue to put our stuff out on social media. We are going to start to ask all of our followers, though, for email addresses. If you guys could just start emailing us email addresses in case we do get taken down on any platforms. I do have a list of some stuff, but if you don't mind us keeping your data, we'd appreciate it. You sending us your email, that if in fact we do get shut down on any platforms, that we're able to email you the platforms that we will continue on. That's really it for me, I think. You got anything else, Eric?
No, it's funny because I had called you up because this is legit. And I had a dream that we got arrested by the NYPD and that we were being transported to the back of the car. I don't know where we'd be transported to, but we both had little buttons in our pockets and it just kept playing. We were pressing them and it just kept playing laughter. So I think the subliminal message with that is, you know, if eventually they decide to arrest us and make up some bullshit charge, we'll be laughing all the way. We haven't stopped laughing since the inception of this, and we're going to keep laughing. You know what? You honestly, John, you've said this before, and I'm going to say it again. The NYPD built this podcast. The NYPD let John McCary retire, you know, a vast amount of knowledge, a lieutenant with a bright career, moving up with the New York City Police Department. The NYPD let myself, successful gun apprehension, a leader amongst men of the police department. I mean, together, both of us had bright careers. They let us leave. And you know what? They built this podcast because if we weren't with the NYPD, this podcast would have never been created. So this podcast was created. It's now necessary. It's definitely a bigger and better path. We're happy that we're doing it. We're actually more elated that we're doing this now than in the end of our careers. It's amazing how things work out. But I do think we have a new genre here when it comes to police media. I mean, a vast amount of politics, but we are covering police media. I do think that police media is necessary. I've actually heard this on the Anti-Hero podcast, which I think is outstanding. There was a guest on there, actually a former police officer. He said that we need more police podcasts out there. I agree on that. You know what? This is a police podcast that is not just talking about true crime, but we're actually talking about real time. What's actually going on in the police world? Not a past incident about how crimes are investigated, but what it's like to be a police officer living the lifestyle of a cop in today's day, in 2024. In the information technology era, under this progressive politics, what it's like to live in law enforcement today. So this is very important. Critique is important. And social media has been a powerful outlet. It's been a powerful tool. I'm so glad that we're discovering and exploring it. Let's keep it rocking. New York's Finest Retired and Filter Podcast, 265 Police Live Series. You watch Chiefs ride on a train, clowns on a train. Take care.
Law enforcement professionals dedicate their lives to serving and protecting our community. But who's protecting their financial futures? That's where Laidlaw Blue comes in. Our wealth management platform is specifically designed for the law enforcement community. Laidlaw Blue is a division within Laidlaw Wealth Management, run by retired New York City detective John McDermott. His status as a retired detective uniquely positions him to establish a deep connection between Laidlaw Blue and the law enforcement community. Our platform is easy to use and provides a range of financial services, including investment management, retirement planning, and insurance solutions. With Laidlaw Blue, you can secure your financial future and provide for your loved ones. Our team of experienced financial advisors understands the unique challenges and opportunities that law enforcement professionals face. We're here to help you navigate the complexities of financial planning and achieve your goals. Laidlaw Blue, secure your financial future today. Book a meeting using the QR code displayed or call us directly on 888-901-BLUE. That's 888-901-BLUE.